along with me. The time is right. There's no better team. Arm in arm, we'll win the fight. It's always been our dream.
Hello, and welcome to PKP Podcast. When we last left our heroes, they were somewhat shocked by the turn events had taken. They'd battled with the Spearow. Pikachu and Ash were both badly injured. Pikachu slightly more critically than Ash, although, you know, Ash just did get, you know, shocked by a giant thunderbolt along with those Spearow. But anyway, they're on their way to Viridian City, and they make it into the Pokemon Center. When the episode opens, Officer Jenny is delivering a speech to the town about how Pokemon thieves are in the area and everyone needs to keep an eye out for suspicious people. And who should come into town but Ash, somebody nobody knows. And he's covered in dirt and scrapes and possibly a bit of blood, and he's carrying an injured Pokemon and running for his life. And yeah, that looks just a tad bit suspicious. But more importantly, we meet Officer Jenny. Officer Jenny are the police women of the Pokemon world, and I say are rather than is because there are many, many, many Officer Jennies, a different one for every city, although it seems there are two in Viridian, judging by the decals on their hats, which is one way that you can tell the Officer Jennies apart. The decal on their hats tends to change from city to city, and the star usually indicates Viridian. Some, they all have different personalities. They seem very similar, but there can be slight, subtle differences. And the Officer Jenny of this particular city is kind of a bit of a goofball. She's a little bit ineffective at being a police woman, it seems. But I'm not sure I would want to go to her with a real crime. At the same time, she's kind of got a helpful side to her. She's pretty willing to help Ash out once she figures out that he's not, you know, a thief, and ends up giving him a rather high-tension ride to the Pokemon Center. I kind of like the dynamic between her and the Nurse Joy of this town, who, they're the nurses of the Pokemon world, in Pokemon centers at least, not in human hospitals. And like the Jennies, there's a whole family of them, and the two families seem to be on good terms. But the two of them seem to have an interesting relationship in that Officer Jenny has probably caused trouble for Nurse Joy before. She may have driven her motorcycle straight into the lobby on more than one occasion and left it parked there while chasing down criminals or ferrying unfortunate people all over town. But anyway, unlike Joy, Jenny is much more kinder to children, especially ones that look like they've been through a rough day. And during her interactions with Ash, we find out that, first of all, Team Rocket's on the loose, and this is back in the days when Team Rocket was actually scary. Those wanted posters are kind of fun. We also learned that Ash's Pokedex can function as an ID, and cannot, if lost, cannot be replaced for some reason. I would imagine Professor Oak could just get him a new one. I mean, even the badges can be reissued, we've learned, thanks to Claire. And the third thing we learn is Ash is the fourth person from Pallet Town to pass through this city, which means all of the other trainers who left have made it to Viridian City as well. They head off to the Pokemon Center, and Misty chokes on the exhaust fumes as she apparently was trying to contact the police about Ash and her fried bike. Can you imagine the look in her face when she found that thing? But she's had to carry it the whole way. Like, for me, that would just totally be not worth it. Like, just go get the police and go back. Anyway, Team Rocket also steals their wanted ad, the one that's hanging on the sign in front of the police station, and reveals their nefarious plan to steal Pokemon from the Pokemon Center. And again, this is back in the early, early days of Team Rocket, when they were actually a force to be reckoned with. They were actually kind of scary. I mean, granted, it's only the second episode. We don't know them very well yet. We don't know what they really are. But right now, they're a villainous, villainous trio. Team Rocket, a trio we'll get to know very, very well, is made up of three people, or three beings, rather, two people, Jesse and James, and then Meowth, their Pokemon, and it's not really stated at this point if Meowth belongs to one of them, if he's kind of, you know, a freelancer, as it were, but the three of them work together as a criminal trio. They work for Team Rocket, headed by the evil Giovanni. This Nurse Joy is, again, a bit more critical, And she really chews out Ash for letting Pikachu get to this condition. But at the same time, she promises that Pikachu's going to be okay, just leave it to her. But, you know, even while she says all those things, she keeps also giving instructions, take this to critical care, and you know, the in surgery sign is up. And it's all very threatening if, you know, it's your first day away from home and you're 10 and Pikachu is in life-threatening condition. So Ash is in the waiting room, and he's just kind of moping around. It's not the best place to be while, you know, he's waiting to just hear the results of the surgery and all that. While he's in the waiting room, we see two things. First of all is the video phones, which is a kind of a staple of the Pokemon world, that they don't just have to call each other, that they can actually, they've actually progressed to the point where they can use video phones, and it's a staple of life. Second is, like, the clock, the cuckoo clock on the wall. And a lot of people think that this might be the first episode where shiny Pokemon are introduced, the differently colored Pokemon, because that Pidgey is actually green. Back to the video phones, Ash decides that he's going to call home. And to me, this is really one of the best scenes in Pokemon, one of my top favorites. And nothing really happens, but I love it anyway. And, you know, at my age, it was totally not cool to like Pokemon. That was kid stuff. And so, of course, because I follow the crowd that way, I hated Pokemon. It was so stupid. I didn't like it at all. At the same time, because I had so many younger brothers and sisters and I babysat, I was exposed to Pokemon all the time. And these three first episodes were ones that I became very familiar with. And a lot of other things came about through that. But most importantly, it was this episode. And this scene in particular is one of the reasons why, like, I eventually broke out on my own from the crowd and started liking Pokemon. It was because something about it struck a chord with me, and I didn't really understand at the time why it was so impacting. I do now, now that I'm an adult, and now that I've moved out of the house and been through college, and I've moved to foreign countries, and I've gone through various aspects of my life away from my parents, I made these phone calls. The awkward call where, you know, your life has just gone to pot and you don't know what to do, but so you call home, but you can't tell them how bad it's really gotten. So you end up just not really saying anything at all. And at the same time, you hang up and you're unsatisfied because you didn't ask them for help and you can't, and they didn't really help you. And you wanted to tell them what was happening, but you didn't. And at the same time, because you could hear their voice and you know that they care, you feel a little better. It's a very bittersweet feeling, but I understand that, and it's very real to me. And as a kid, even though I hadn't been through that particular situation, I still kind of found those parent-child relations very interesting, I guess. Anyway, this same thing is happening with Ash. Things are about as bad as they can get, as bad as he knows how they can get. And really, I think this is the lowest moment in Ash's life. He has a lot of low moments over the course of the series, but this is his first struggle, being away on his journey. This is the point where he finds out whether or not he can handle his own life. It's the moment where he learns how to deal with struggles without his mother. It's a very trying situation for him, whereas everything that happens to him after that, he has a support system. He has his friends, like he has Brock and Misty with him at all times. He's been through this one instant before, so he knows that he has the ability to handle things, even if they get out of control. And a lot of things do get out of control from here on out, but this is the first, and it's really very touching. And his mom answers the phone, and it's really cute. She's got, like, her bathrobe and her hair up in a towel and a face mask on, and she, you know, answers the phone, and the video function is disabled. And the second she realizes it's Ash, you know, she rips the mask off, the towel out of her hair, and, you know, turns the video function on so that her son can see her face. And I think that's special, and it's very interesting that Ash keeps his video function disabled. And, you know, granted, he's still covered with mud and scrapes and all those things. Maybe he doesn't want his mom to see. But again, that's a feeling that I kind of empathize with Ash, is that this is the lowest moment of his life. I don't think he has a face that he wants his mother to see. I don't think he has a face that he's proud to show. The conversation's a bit one-sided, as, you know, Delia is extremely, extremely excited that, you know, her son's already in Viridian City and he's doing so well. And, you know, meanwhile, Ash is, like, all depressive, like, yeah, I suck. I feel like a fallen Pidgey, yada, 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 yada. And she says some very interesting things. Like, she talks about Ash's father. And this is one of the very, very few, possibly only points where Ash's father is mentioned. In the Japanese version, she also mentions his grandfather, that his grandfather was also a Pokemon trainer, that they'd all be very proud of him. This conversation alone sparks a massive, massive debate about Ash's home life, more so than even Gary and the absence of Ash having any real friends, as I noted in the previous episode. You never see Ash's dad. You never see any evidence that Ash ever had a dad. There's no presence of a father in his life beyond this one mention. The only statement ever released is that Ash's dad is Pokemon trainer like Ash, and therefore he's out on his own journey. And again, we have to remember that this is some sort of parallel world. It's a very different culture than what we're used to. The idea, and again, it's also Japan. And I remember when I was living in Japan, I met a lot of men who lived away from their families for work. Like, it just, I guess it wasn't feasible for the whole family to move to Tokyo or Nagoya or wherever the work was. And so the dads would either have to commute, or sometimes they would, live away from the family on weekdays and come home on weekends, things of that nature. And I guess Pokemon training kind of follows in that trend. It's a job that involves a lot of travel and being away from home. But again, the fact that Ash's father is completely absent, no matter what, kind of starts to look suspicious. And again, the only statement released by the Pokemon creators is that Ash's dad will be introduced to the series if and when Ash's character needs to mature in that direction. And at the point, it seems that it's not really needed. Ash is kind of developing quite nicely in several different ways with other issues. And it was thought for a moment that if there was ever a season to have Ash's dad appear, it would have been the Sinnoh region. Due to just the nature of that series and the things that were going down. Because Sinnoh, wow, that was a season. I can't wait to get to that and talk about that. But it didn't happen, and it's unknown if it ever will. Ash's mother says something interesting during the phone call, like Ash is being all depressive, and immediately she like harps on, I won't let you talk about yourself that way, yada, 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 yada. And I sometimes wonder if she's just being the typical overprotective mom, or if this is something that she's felt that she's had to deal with before. Because I think it's normal for kids to get discouraged now and then, and especially when he's, undergoing such a life-threatening change. And instead of being like, oh, is everything okay, are you sure everything's all right, having confidence in Ash's abilities and just assuming he's just going through a rough time, she immediately thinks he's being low on himself, suffering from some low self-esteem issue or something, and you can do anything you set your mind to. And it makes me wonder, what kind of kid was Ash prior to leaving for his Pokemon journey? Does his mom feel like she needs to continuously buoy him up because he's been down lately? And a lot of questions about Ash's life prior to the Pokemon journey come up in this episode, in this one conversation. She also brings up the running gag of, are you changing your underwear every day? And finally, they have to end the phone call. And as I said, it's kind of a bittersweet ending. Like, it doesn't really solve anything, but at the same time, it makes you feel a tiny bit better. After that, Professor Oak calls the Pokemon Center. And Ash also sees a wall engraving of several legendary Pokemon, one of which is Ho-Oh. It actually looks more like Articuno, people have noticed, but we'll just say for the purposes of this that it's Ho-Oh. And when Ash tells this to Professor Oak, Professor Oak doesn't believe him at all, thinking that, no one's ever seen this, even though they've searched for it their whole life. But more importantly than that, I want to know what Ash is doing answering phone calls at the Brain City Pokemon Center. Like, does he not get the concept of, this is not his place of work? I can just imagine a receptionist being like, what are you doing in my space, kid? And we've also realized in certain episodes that Ash can barely work certain electronic devices, computers being one of them. Like, he tries to karate chop it at some point. Like, Ash should not be touching these people's computers under any circumstances. But he does, and Professor Oak is really happy that Ash has made it to Viridian City. And he also mentions that Gary and the other two trainers have also made it to Viridian City. And it's a really interesting conversation that Ash is having here as well, because Professor Oak says that he's pleasantly surprised that Ash made it so soon, and I had my doubts about you and that Pikachu, and but at the same time he also seems to give Ash a little bit of encouragement, like kind of joking around with him. I bet him $1 million that you totally would have Pokemon by this point. Of course Ash doesn't. It's really interesting to see how Professor Oak deals with Ash. I don't think he's quite sure what to make of Ash at this point, because he seems to trade off quickly between encouragement and just total, like, you are never going to make it. The conversation is very abruptly interrupted by Oak and his need for food, and Misty makes her appearance at that point with her bike that is just totally trashed, and she rips Ash a new one. It's important to note that Misty is a little bit older than Ash, not a lot, like, no more than a year, but old enough that she can play the age card when she's like calling him a little brat and just kind of reaming into him about what happened to her bike. She's not really into giving Ash a break, despite any protests. And even when Ash tries to help her up after she falls, she just kind of pushes him away and continues yelling at him. But once she finds out Pikachu is injured, she kind of puts her bike to the side, and Ash promises, that he's gonna make it right. He's gonna somehow get his life back in order and either pay her back for the bike or, whatever it takes. And at that point, she kind of lets it go and lets, Pikachu take priority. Pikachu comes out of surgery and he's doing just fine, thankfully. And the dust never really gets to settle, because that's when Jesse and James and Meowth show up and they attack the Pokemon Center. And this is the first episode where we get to hear the Team Rocket motto. It's been modified many a time, but this is it. This is the moment where it all began. It's also the first moment where Team Rocket travels in a balloon and uses that as part of their weaponry. They'll eventually upgrade to other forms of transport and harassment. During the course of trying to protect the Pokemon, we discover a few things. One is that the Pokemon can be transferred over the PC, which is something if you've played the video games. And again, it's also you get to see that the Nurse Joy in Pewter City looks exactly the same. You also learn that the Viridian City Pokemon Center has a backup generator run by Pikachu, which is really quite fascinating. They're kind of cute, chugging along in their little wheel. But Team Rocket continue their assault, and it seems to me that if Team Rocket hadn't gotten so sidetracked with their Pikachu stealing and general, Ash Ketchum harassment campaign, that they might have actually been fairly successful criminals. As much as they got defeated, they did cause a lot of trouble, and they almost succeeded in at least getting away with some Pokemon. It's not quite a Butch and Cassidy level scheme, but it's not too bad, really. At any rate, the Pokemon Center doesn't look like it's really prepared to take on a Team Rocket attack or, withstand a siege. Ash demonstrates his general fail with some of the Pokemon Center Pokemon as he tries to fight off Team Rocket, and luckily Misty, who has a little bit more experience, steps in and tries to save the day. Unfortunately, all her Pokemon are water Pokemon. I don't know why she started with Goldeen. Like, she could have started with Starmie, who can fight outside of water. But it seems that maybe she wasn't thinking ahead, or maybe she was stalling for time. Either way, serves as a distraction as Ash tries to get the heck out of Dodge. Unfortunately, that bike comes back to haunt him, and he hits it and is stopped. Pikachu, though, wakes up and calls for backup from the Pikachu power generator, and comes up with the plan on the spot to Thundershock Team Rocket. Meowth decides that he's going to take on Pikachu, and if you've ever seen, like, Tom and Jerry, you know that this isn't going to end well. The mouse always wins. And between Pikachu, the backup generator Pikachu, and Ash pedaling on Misty's broken bike, they manage to create enough electricity to really just bring the house down, kind of literally. And Team Rocket, for the first time, goes blasting off into space. And what Team Rocket comments on after their extremely crushing defeat is that Pikachu's power exceeds its evolutionary level, being that Pikachu is a lot stronger than it should be. Which isn't such an odd thing to say, because frankly, Pikachu, if you play the game, are a bit of a weak Pokemon. They have some really amazing attacks, but, you know, overall, their stats are not that great. And, you know, they're not really all that effective against, you know, rocks and ground types. They have a lot of flaws and frailties. So it's really kind of surprising that Pikachu can just generate this mass amount of power. And, of course, between all that power and copying exploding, the Viridian City Pokemon Center is just in ruins. Luckily, the computer survived, and Ash and Misty and Pikachu decide that they're going to continue on their journey now that things are safe, and they head off into the Viridian Forest, hoping to make it to the next destination. And here is where Ash, the first Pokemon Ash ever captured, Caterpie, makes his debut. And the episode ends with Ash in a stalemate with Caterpie, ready to catch his first Pokemon. This episode kind of ends on a bit of a cliffhanger. Will Ash catch the Pokemon or not? But it's really where we have to end it. This episode is not necessarily a favorite for a lot of people, despite it having so many characters debuting, so many new Pokemon debuting. A lot of really interesting scenes that turn out to be really important later on. But it's kind of an interesting little episode tucked away, number two. And that's where we're going to have to end it for today. So I'll see you all next time. And as usual, if you'd like to comment on this episode or anything that may be coming down the road that you'd like to talk about, you can visit the blog, www.peekapeepodcast.blogspot.com. You can also visit us at our VideoJug page, which is at www.videojugpages.com/sites/3844. But thank you for listening. This has been Pika P Podcast, and hopefully we'll see you next time. Bye.